The Queen's Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
The most heavily studied interpersonal relationship types in history is that between a man and a woman. Countless self-help books are written on the subject, and there are many out there who make their careers on this exact topic. However, the vast majority of experts deal with one-on-one relationships, boyfriend-girlfriend, husband-wife, you know, the romantic relationships, the family-building relationships. What is slightly less studied is the overall relationships between men and women as groups. Don't get me wrong, there's still plenty out there, but it's certainly less than the individual relationship gurus. What is much less discussed here in our little insular from world is the relationship between Orthodox Jewish men and Orthodox Jewish women. More specifically, what should from men know about from women? And who better to have on to discuss this topic than the hosts of the Normal From Woman podcast?
Hi, my name is Alex Flexer, otherwise known as Alexandra Flexer, and for the pages of Mishpacha magazine. I am an op-ed columnist for Mishpacha. I'm also the co-host of the podcast Normal From Woman.
Hi, I'm Rivki Silver. I am the co-host of Normal From Woman with Alex Flexer. I am a classically trained musician, and I am also a writer for Family First, which is the women's weekly of Mishpacha magazine.
Alex and Rivki will be discussing a wide range of topics that we would be better off if from men understood about from women. And to be clear, although we will be discussing some areas that pertain to the interpersonal, this discussion is meant as an overview of from women as they relate to Orthodox Judaism. All right, so Alex and Rivki, thank you so much for joining me this week. Normally, when I have these types of conversations, we'll get into exactly what that is in a second. I have made the mistake of just jumping into random parts of it. So what I'm going to do this time is take a step back. We have you guys on to talk about the topic of what from men don't really get about from women. And we have the perfect people to talk about this, the host of the Normal From Women podcast, which is why I asked you guys to talk about this. So before we get into any topics whatsoever, the first question that I have is this a topic that needs exploration? Is this something that the greater from male population doesn't know about the greater from female population? Is this something that really needs a deep dive, or is this something that I'm kind of just grasping at straws here?
Wow. Well, you know, from my experience, I often hear from men what their thoughts are about from women based on their own experience with a from woman in their lives. So whether it's their wives or their sisters, and often, you know, especially men who maybe not be so involved with other from women in the workforce or socially, it's almost like their, you know, evaluations are made or generalizations are made just by the woman in their own families. And I really do think it's important to hear the voices of women, because often our own families, you know, it's subjective, or they may be similar to us in terms of our own backgrounds and where we're coming from. The more from women who have voices, and thank you, you know, for amplifying this, because I think it's very important. And that actually is one of the reasons why I, you know, started writing for Mishpacha in the main magazine as an op-ed columnist, you know, next to Jonathan Rosenblum and Eitan Kobri, because I felt women need to be part of that Orthodox communal conversation. It shouldn't be dominated by men, and all readers, men and women, should be hearing from women. I think it's really important.
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of times, you know, like you said, Alex, we know what we know based on who we know. And that is how we kind of develop our own perspectives and our experiences and our viewpoint through which we, you know, our lens, if you will, about through we where we view the world. But at the same time, I feel like through my writing over the years, I've written for many different Jewish publications, and now through Family First, I feel like there is that also commonality that comes to like the whole human experience. You know, we each have our own individual hashkafas and our individual experiences and our perspectives, but we all kind of, at the end of the day, like want more or less the same things. We want a happy life. We want a fulfilled life. And I think the more we can dive into that and just explore and listen to each other about like, well, what does it mean to you? And what does it mean to you to achieve these goals? You know, like the basic human needs, like what's it, Maslow's hierarchy, right? We all want, you know, certain things. And just a matter of not assuming that we know what those person's things are, but to really listen and to and to hear what other people want, specifically women.
So it's interesting that you both spoke about like how we interact just based on our own individual experiences and how we have, and the only things that we basically know is what we can see with our eyes or what we've experienced. The interesting thing about this conversation is this is not going to be about those things. We're not going to be talking about our own interpersonal relationships. This conversation, just to frame it, is going to be more about from men in general and from women in general. So it's not going to be about how I interact with my wife or my mother or my sister. And it's not going to be how you guys interact with your husbands or fathers or brothers. It's going to be how the male population can better understand the female population. And then maybe one day we can do a reverse one, which might be a much shorter episode.
and that's for our podcast.
That's for your podcast, exactly. And hopefully you can get on somebody that's a little bit more knowledgeable in men than I am. So the first area that I want to tackle is probably one that's very near and dear to almost every woman's heart is the work-life balance. Unless you have the privilege of not having to work, which I hope all of us have that privilege at some point. But the work-life balance is something that men may not understand as much as they should. I know that when I go out to work in the morning, I leave early, I come back late. I leave potentially before my kids are awake. I come back after my kids are asleep. I don't see what goes on that day from the time they wake up until the time they go to sleep. I see them on the weekends, which is when I'm really on. But other than that, I know that my wife has to get them out. My wife has to pick them up from school. And my wife also has a job. And I'm sure that this is the same kind of thing that a lot of other people go through with slight variation. So I wondered if you guys can talk about the work-life balance of the from woman.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something, like you said, that is really near and dear and stressful and pressing for so many from women, especially as I'm sure Alex can speak to this more, but as the socioeconomic needs and standards of our community continue to rise and, you know, more kids need more things, like all, you know, I don't know how it is where you are, but like everyone has like a, what's it called? The Segway Mini. Like everyone and their mother has a Segway, not and their mother, everyone and their brother has a Segway Mini, right? Do you know how much those things cost? I do, because one of my kids has one and they are not cheap. So it's like, you know, where is this coming from? Especially if like a lot of women in my community, at least, choose to have jobs or are able to have jobs whose hours are flexible to the kids, as in their jobs end in the early afternoon so they can still pick up their kid from playgroup or they can pick up their kid from elementary school. But I have other friends who don't have jobs like that, and they're always stuck in those in-between times, like in between camp and school, when winter vacation starts, like, you know, on break and things like that. And then what do you do if you don't have family in town, if you don't have expendable income for like a whole week of babysitting, you know? And then even just like the mental load of, let's say you have a job that pays you well and has good hours, but then just the mental load of, this kid has a dentist appointment, this kid needs this, this kid all of a sudden is sick and needs the doctor, let's not even get started about testing for things. You know, like it's really, really just like a very large burden on top of making Shabbos and making Yantav. So I think that it's probably safe to say, I mean, I'm a stay-at-home mom, I still get stressed out by this. So it is a very, I'm a stay-at-home mom who has a lot of like projects and deadlines that also create stress outside of just like my, you know, like I have other pressures also.
Nobody's
you work from home, Risky.
I work from home. I know, but it's true. Fine. It's true. But I do, I work from home, but very freelance. So I always don't think of it as real work, but it is. And so we're all stressed out. We're all trying to figure out how we're going to do it, how we're going to afford this, how we're going to afford it mentally and physically. Are we going to stay up till 2 a.m. on Thursday night making Shabbos, knowing that we're going to be a wreck the next day and knowing that like your body actually needs sleep in order to be able to function. It's good for you to sleep, you know, but then something has to give and we all have to choose which ball to let drop, so to speak, which ball can bounce and which ball is going to break. And it's not always so clear cut what that's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't say it any better. I just want to preface this discussion on my end, just, you know, we're not representing all from women here. Right. We're representing the normal ones.
No, maybe we're really not. I don't know.
Yeah, we're really not. You know, Rifki mentioned, we're both, you know, freelance writers that work from home. We you know, we're not in the position where we work full time and we have to run home. I have a friend who works full time and she puts on her challenge at 5 o'clock in the morning on a Friday. And she walks in the house 15 minutes before Shabbos starts. So, but we can speak to the experiences of so many from women that we are connected to. And, you know, we have our finger on the pulse, you know, as writers in the community, and as podcast hosts speaking to so many women. Listen, there are two things I want to say. Number one, I think from women are superheroes. I mean, Rivki laid it out, you know, but between obviously our commitment to our religion and community. I mean, not all people are so involved in community, like from women are involved in building community, you know, and working and Shabbos and Yontif and all that. The other piece I just wanted to say here as well is every family looks different. And I am curious, you know, about these like gender divisions, if you will. You know, here, sort of the assumption in this conversation is that the woman is the one that's making Shabbos and the woman's the one that's making the doctor's appointment and sending the kids to, you know, to the doctor. And the father's the one that shows up early in the morning, goes to Minyan, gets his coffee, runs out the door and comes back when the kids are sleeping. I think that may be the typical, you know, I'm curious, is it what you have to say about this? But that may be sort of the typical setup, but it's not always the setup. Many families, you know, the husbands really do take a lot of the mental load, a lot of the physical load. So it's something to note and to think about.
So from our perspective here, and at least, so let's start again. There's the pre-COVID world and there's the current COVID world where,
yes. Good point.
As long as we're working from home, a lot of my friends, a lot of people in my neighborhood, the men took on a lot more of the general responsibilities. They were, once you cut out in New York, it's easy to have an hour and a half commute each way. And once you cut out 3 hours of your day that you no longer have to commute, you have a lot more time to be able to devote to your family that you didn't have before. So that is a huge thing that is a new area of this. Now, in terms of before COVID, what I had worked out with my company, actually multiple companies that I worked with, that I didn't start work until 10 o'clock. It just means that I'm walking into the door, in the door at 8:30 at night at minimum. But that what that does is that helps my wife in the morning. So I could either help her out in the morning or I can help her out in the evening. I just how much I had to work versus how much I had to commute. I could only do one or the other. Now, not every company is going to be as flexible as mine were, as the two that I were working for were. But I do think that there is an attempt, a strong attempt from men, at least in my community, I can't speak for too much outside of it, to do what they can to help around the house with a lot of these other things. I grew up in a household where my father cooked. My father had a seasonal job. He did not work in the winter, actually. He was a landscaper. So during the winter, he was the one taking us to doctor's appointments. He was the one doing the chaperoning on trips. He didn't work in the winter. From December until February, he was basically off. So he was the one that did all the quote unquote classical mom jobs for the school as he was available. But I think that in general, the way that it works in from families, but maybe even outside of the from world, is that the husband probably has the greater demanding job. This is a generalization. There's for sure other ways where it's reversed or where they're equal and they probably have to have help doing other things, whether it's from a hired help or from a grandparent. But I do think that our generation is a little different than previous generations in this regard.
Mm-hmm. And just to add, Rifki and I live out of town. That's very different than New York. I mean, I from speaking to people in New York, it is just the average and the norm for both men and women to be working full time. Many people have like full time help.
Yep.
Because someone needs to be home when the kids get off the bus.
Yes, there's live-ins. Well, it also is changing now that companies are maybe opening up to the possibility of people working from home, you know, indefinitely. That might change, but don't count on it. For now, a lot of people have been able to let go of their added help, and maybe they'll need to bring them back in slowly but surely. But for now, even the ones that are working full time, unless you're basically a doctor, somebody has to be in the office right. You can't do your job remotely. Yeah, that's it's could become the norm. I want to focus a little bit away from the from this and just something that's a little bit related, which is hobbies and interests. Mm-hmm. So we spoke about how packed the day is with work and household chores and all those things. It doesn't leave a lot of time for hobbies. And I am speaking this from my personal experience. I have a lot of hobbies. My wife doesn't have as many hobbies. Mm. And I've been asking her since we've gotten married, get some hobbies. And I've tried to make time for her to get hobbies. Is it a thing for women to not be so motivated or feel maybe more guilty about adding in more hobbies?
Do you want to take this one first, Alex? I have some ideas, no. though.
Rifki, you're the musician. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this.
I think that you were definitely hitting the nail on the head as about, you know, feeling guilty, so to speak. I would frame it in more along the lines of maybe not taking time to prioritize ourselves as much. And to understand that these hobbies, so to speak, aren't, you know, something that should necessarily be shelved, but really are things that can give us chias, that can really give us energy to be able to reconnect to the, I don't know, let's say less pleasurable parts of our job, like the laundry and the dishes and the things that need to get done. I mean, let's say even like, whatever, if you're doing your own laundry and your own dishes or whatever it is, you know, but like the stuff that has to get done that you don't necessarily enjoy. So like making time for a hobby, I think like it could even be like, you know, 10 to 20 minutes a week. Like it doesn't have to be like a huge time commitment. It could be like doing a paint night with friends like once a month, like something, anything that's just kind of like, I'm doing this just for me. This is something I enjoy drawing. I enjoy, you know, art. I enjoy singing, get together with friends and do like a karaoke. Like some of my friends and I once rented out like a karaoke bar, like private room, and we just did karaoke and it was like so fun. We were like crazy. Just things like that. I feel like, I'm always signing up for like various little like performances around Cleveland that are like, I'm always like signing up. I'm like, this is highly impractical and will probably cause stress in my life at some point as I'm trying to like navigate like all the scheduling things. But then at the end of it, even with the stress of this, and I have to get my niece to babysit or whatever, at the end of the day, I'm so energized after I spend, you know, however much time it is that I allot to this particular hobby, this thing where I have a talent that Hashem gave me and I'm putting time and effort into it and it fills me up. And then I can go more into the bedtime routine or whatever it is as like a better, happier, more peppy wife and mother, which is ultimately how I want to be into the world. And sometimes I need that little extra pick me up to get there.
Yeah. Alex, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some women that use, Rifki, you mentioned like talents, use their talents in their professions and channel that in their jobs, which is really, really awesome. You know, I think there are also women, let's say, I know a few friends who are runners, you know, whether that's a hobby or not, you know, but these are people who like cannot function without their runs. Like it is, talk about self-care. It's just, it's like a necessity for them. And I'm not a great example of this. I don't really have hobbies. I think the work that I do utilizes, you know, my strengths. So I feel fulfilled that way. But I think Rifki, you're right. Like this is really about prioritizing yourself. And that is where often we have a really, really hard time. If it's something like so clear, like the runner who literally like cannot function emotionally and physically, if she doesn't have her run, like, okay, that's like one level, like it must be. But sort of for the rest of us that don't have those like necessity outlets, we often put everyone else around us first. And often that's just to survive. It's a survival mechanism because everyone's got to get taken care of. And this is something I know this is not just for women, but women in general really, really struggle with is how we make time for ourselves and how we incorporate expression, you know, our personal expression in that. It's very hard.
It's funny. I just want to say two things because you mentioned running and you guys had probably the most famous from runner on your show last week from the time we were recording. Beattie Deitch, for those not familiar, who qualified for the Olympics. But you're not talking about her. You're talking about people that run not for a profession, for a hobby.
Right, also, exactly.
Some of us do podcasts for a hobby. I know some of us do podcasts as part of their jobs.
Yeah.
Some of us do podcasts as a hobby. Now, you don't consider the podcast a hobby, right?
until we're making big bucks, right, Rishi? This is a hobby. Right.
I feel like you put in too much time and effort in it for it to be qualified as a hobby at this point.
I want to talk a little bit about women in leadership positions. So in general, and Alex, you spoke about that a little bit earlier, that you thought that it was important to have women's voices in a publication that in the op-ed section that might have more exclusively been male writers. But it's not only in like magazine publications, it's kind of everywhere. I mean, obviously in the Orthodox world, we only have male rabbis, but even more than that, almost every shul has a rule that women can't be the president. Women can't even be the first vice president. It might have to be a little bit further down the road. There's other areas in Judaism where it's more likely to have a man in the position of authority, in the position of leadership, than it is for women. Now, I want to ask two different questions about this, about how women perceive their role in terms of leadership, and talking about how a woman who wants some sort of a female leader, where could she turn to, assuming they want to stay in the firm world?
Okay, so just remembering the second question first, and you'll have to remind me about the first one later. I think traditionally our women leaders, and again, I don't know if you want to hear this or not, but in terms of personal leadership, like a woman who wants a woman to guide her, are found in our rebbetzins and are found in our teachers. I think there's some historically and currently very strong Jewish women who are in those roles and who are making impacts, direct impacts on women and their families and teaching and, you know, and mentoring. You know, beyond that, I think, you know, there are women that really are more focused on their families and building their families and having leadership roles in their families. I think that's a beautiful thing. I don't think every woman needs to be communally minded. I think it's something though that like should still be nurtured in our educational system and in our teens, where, you know, it's not just like women's roles are, you know, creating the tablescapes and focusing on the yontif meals and, you know, all these female, traditionally Orthodox feminine areas, and that it is, it's encouraged and it's embraced that we need women who are involved in, as I said, like Orthodox communal conversations. And I'm coming from a place where I've served as on a board of a shul, Rabbi Moshe Hauer, his shul in Baltimore. You know, this is 10 years ago, B'nai Jacob Shari Zion. He's now the president of the OU. And he was just actually on the cover of Mishpacha magazine. You know, I was on a whole shul board. There are many shuls that would not accept that. And there are many women that would not have those opportunities. Here in Cleveland, you know, I was involved in starting a girls' school, Chaviva High School, as a board member. That school was started mainly by women. The men on the board were actually like the husbands of the women who started the school. Our mikvah board is full of women. Our Beis Yaakovs are full of, you know, women board members. So that's the community that I'm coming from, where there are many, many communally focused women who are very active and building institutions, Bikur Cholam, and you could just go on and making real change on the ground. I do also acknowledge that there are some Beis Yaakovs where they are dominated by men on their boards, and there are no women on their boards. I struggle with that. You know, this is girls' education. You know, like there should be women on the board. You know, I can, you know, a shul that doesn't have women on their board, like there, I can respect to a certain extent, depending on the type of shul that it is. You know, if it mainly caters to men, you know, there are all different types of shuls. But, you know, I'm coming from a place, I think, of privilege, honestly, where I've been able to take leadership opportunities. But I know there are many women who aren't afforded that.
For sure. And I was thinking also along the lines of, you know, on the shul boards and things like that, that honestly doesn't bother me so much, which I guess may scandalize some women who are listening to me and being a bad feminist, but the, as far as shuls go, like I'm not in the place where I'm even thinking about being able to daven in a shul for many, many, many years now. It's like literally not a space. I daven in my house. I like davening in my house. I like hearing Kedusha also fine. You know, I like being able to go when I can, but for us where I live, there's not programs for kids. I'm home in the morning. Shul is not like my scene. So for me, like, it's like, okay, it's anyways, my husband's field. So that, and I'm whatever, I'm in a very yeshivish community. So for me, it's like not even, it's not in my,
in your purview.
you know. But I think about in my very Yeshivish community, I think about like the head of Bikur Cholom for many, many years was this amazing woman who was running it like a dynamo. I'm thinking about all of the women who started these really complex and far-reaching chesed organizations. And I think about Mishpacha, the leadership of Mishpacha is women, you know, like they're running it. So in a sense, like there's certain areas where I feel like I wouldn't even want to be like involved in the board, but there's other areas where women are like strongly leading. And I'm just wondering, again, that there's lots of areas where women are leading and are steiging. And those are the things I would hold up to my girls and say, like, look at these women here doing this. Look at these women here doing that. Well, these women here doing these other things and leading these magazines and starting magazines and all sorts of things.
In doing this podcast, I've had the privilege of talking to a bunch of different people. I don't know if she wants me to drop her name, so I won't. As a matter of fact, I'm very sure she doesn't want me to drop her name. But when I covered the Siyam Hashas, somebody very high up in the Aguda is a woman, and she was the one who was coordinating everything for me, and she was the one that invited me to sit in the press box at the Siyam Hashas.
Amazing.
And she did all of these things. Like so it's in places that you wouldn't necessarily even think have women in leadership positions. The Aguda has somebody and not just her. There's a few people. When I went to the office, yeah, I saw that there's a lot of people in a lot of even more right-wing organizations that have women in very important positions. So
yes,
maybe they're not the face of it, but they are there.
But they're there. Exactly. And yeah, I feel like there's also, it depends on like your community and the type of community that you're in. Like some women don't want to be the face of it. They are perfectly happy running all the logistics and knowing that the logistics that they are running are making things happen.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? So then you can have the question of like, yeah, but what about the optics and what about girls seeing women? And that's a whole discussion that, yeah, should be had. But I think that also, you know, different communities have different standards and different priorities. And I think that we have to be careful to respect the priorities and standards of various communities with their own different nuances and not to project what we think is right onto the communities that have different hashkafas, because whatever, shivim panim latorah. Do you know what I mean? Like there's different ways you can be in different,
yeah,
you can have different priorities and they can be okay.
The only concern I do have is, you know, we often hear like, oh, these are the, you know, these women are doing this, but like, they don't really want to be up front and center, or they prefer to be behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Like that's the ideal. And sometimes that rubs me a little bit the wrong way.
I hear that.
You know, one could argue for tenuous reasons, they want to be behind the scenes, whatever, but there are many women that are highly ambitious. And who, not that they want to be like front and center, just so people can look at them or whatever it is, but just because, just like a man would get whatever recognition or,
yes,
be in a visible leadership role, they too. So I definitely hear both sides.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that point, Alex. It's a very valid point.
Okay, and I guess I was guilty of exactly what Alex just said, because I mentioned that, oh, a woman who doesn't really want to be in the spotlight. And it's not because she, like, I've asked her actually to come on the show, and she's like, no, I don't do those things. That's not me.
I know who you're talking about also. Yeah.
So I don't want to be at the point where like, my guest is calling me out on something I just did. I just want to point out that there's a very real reason why I didn't mention her name.
Yeah. Did I answer both of your questions on
you did.
Leadership?
You did.
Okay.
You answered both of them like in the first go around. You're like,
okay,
you, later. You guys are both good.
And I feel like, am I being too yeshivish?
Not at all.
It's fine. It's absolutely fine.
I know.
It's also a decent contrast, because like, I think we're all from three, not very different communities, but different enough that I think listeners will understand like the type of community that each one of the three of us come from. I don't think.
It's diverse.
Yeah.
So
I want to move on to a topic that when we were discussing this conversation, you guys actually brought up to me, because I had a whole outline of things that we should talk about. And then you guys brought up satisfaction and fulfillment as something that we should bring in. So this kind of is related to everything that we've spoken to until now, but it really is its own thing, where women have this kind of, I don't want to say this box that sometimes they feel the need to fit into, and they might not be able to do some of the other things that either they want to do or they think they should be doing. So I'll turn it over to you guys, since this was your topic. of satisfaction and fulfillment.
Yeah, this is something that one of our listeners actually brought up to us after, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember what episode it was. I'm blanking on it now. But just the idea that for a lot of women, the role of mother is extremely fulfilling, but it is not completely fulfilling, if that means. Like, I think a lot of women, if your life goes on the trajectory of, you know, you get married at a certain age and you start a family, I've heard expressed, you know, like, and then Bezos Hashem, like a person's family grows. And then after a certain number of years, I don't know, like 10 years, something, 5 years, I don't know, it depends on each person. A person could wake up and be like, "What? This is my life now. You know, these are all the goals, and I met all my goals, and now what?" You know, they still feel that desire to, I don't know, Alex, you can maybe speak to this, like, but make their own unique mark on the world. Obviously, raising children and raising the next generation is 100% making a mark on the world, but it's also one of those things where you do not see the end product for decades. And so it's the kind of thing where you put your kishkas into raising your kids the right way, and you daven and you do all the things and you read the books and you whatever, but you don't really know what the outcome is going to be for a very long time. And so I feel like it's a lot of women really want to be able to contribute in a way that they find personally meaningful. And what's the word I'm looking for? Fulfilling. Oh, hello. Fulfilling. Yes. In a way that they can see very tangible results right away, whether it is going into a field or a profession, which is something that they find very rewarding. It's intellectually rewarding, it's emotionally rewarding. There's lots of different ways to find fulfillment. It can be using your brain in a certain way. It can be giving in a certain way. It can be, you know, getting recognition in a certain way. It can be expressing yourself creatively. There's as many different types of people as there are ways to find fulfillment, but it's a matter of having the time and effort, and in many cases, resources to be able to even find a way to become fulfilled. And if a person isn't able to do that, then it can be deeply frustrating and even damaging, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you said the word resources. I think that's really important. I think there are many women that I mentioned earlier, just sort of on survival mode, you know, and whether they don't have the resource of time or financial resources just to focus on themselves and their own personal fulfillment, that can really be a huge struggle.
I will say that I don't know that this is something specific to women or to from women. I think this is, especially if you're talking about people not having the time or the resources, I don't know that men are any better at getting this fulfillment, because if you talk about the classic woman that Rifki was describing, that woman ends up getting married to a specific man that you could probably picture in your head, and that guy is going to be on that same type of a trajectory where they get 10 years down the line, like, all right, now what? I have to go to this job in the morning just to support whatever I built at this point, but again, leaving my mark on the world. I don't have the resources to be able to do anything aside from this. Yeah, I have my hobbies. Yeah, I have my friends, but I have all this other stuff that I wasn't able to accomplish, or till this point I wasn't able to accomplish. So I don't know that that's specifically a female, a from woman thing. But if you want to talk,
it's a human thing. Yeah.
It might be a human thing, but I could be wrong. I'm sure that there's listeners out there right now, like thinking, like it could be the woman thinking, no, you don't know what it's like. It's different. And then there's a man thinking, like, nah, maybe you're right. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, when we're just so busy, and certainly I've written about the, you know, challenge of from Bala bias, for call perspectives, you know, I think that's a great episode, is the lifestyle of the from man. Whoa, talk about superwoman. That's a superman.
Yes.
Talking about davening and fitting and learning. I mean, it's immense. Please God, we find fulfillment through these things. I mean, there are different types of fulfillment. There is spiritual fulfillment. You know, for an example, I mean, hopefully in all of our daily activities that keep us so busy, we find levels of fulfillment. When I think about the term fulfillment, I think about self-knowledge and really knowing who we are, what our strengths are, what our abilities are, and what makes us tick and what makes us passionate and what lights our fire. And finding some way in our day-to-day life, doesn't have to be daily, but finding some way in our everyday life to keep that fire alive and do things that make us feel like who we are. I just, you know, I mentioned spiritual fulfillment. I think that is a real thing for women. I'd imagine it is for men too. In 2012, Call Perspectives. I don't know if you, are you familiar with that journal, Call Perspectives?
I'm not.
Okay. So this was Moish Bain, from who is the president of the OU, Rabbi Howard. And I mentioned, said he was the president. He's actually the executive director, but they started a journal and it was around for like 6 years or so, addressing issues in the Orthodox world and focusing on solutions. Hmm. And they did a whole issue on the connectedness challenge, like how we as Orthodox Jews, you know, may feel a lack of connection to Torah, to Hashem, to Judaism, despite the fact that we are just, you know, we're thriving, quote unquote, externally as religious Jews. And I think for women, I can speak for men too. I think that finding spiritual fulfillment is not easy, even though we, you know, may be doing the motions. And there are many women that, you know, whether it's because they stopped learning from seminary or they defined connection via, you know, learning chavrusas and, you know, reading Musar books when they're in seminary and stopped that once they got married and stopped davening and all these things and are trying very desperately to feel connected as from women and their mothers and their wives. And it's so important for women to be connected. Mm-hmm. I think that is a real issue that many, many women face.
Absolutely.
I'll add to that I think it's once you kind of don't have your life revolve exclusively around the Jewish calendar. So when you're in yeshiva, when you're in seminary, when you're earlier in your life, everything is around the school calendar and the Jewish holidays. But once that's not necessarily the exclusive thing, and what you're learning in yeshiva, what you're learning in seminary isn't the next holiday, isn't the next topic, it's a lot more difficult to get that spiritual fulfillment. I could understand that women who maybe stop davening and stop learning faster than men would might have a greater difficulty in maintaining that spiritual connection, especially with men going davening three times a day. Women hopefully do it, but I would understand that it's more likely that women wouldn't. But I do think that calendar, that if you're no longer on the school calendar, if you're no longer exclusively when you're in school, holidays do not sneak up on you. You know when the next Yontif is coming, right?
And you're preparing for it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But how many times do you just turn around and like, oh, it's Purim? Oh, I didn't. I guess I got to put it on a shelf manos together. Things like that just didn't happen when you were a kid, when you were a teenager, even when you were a young adult and it was still fresh in your mind. But things, the only holiday that can basically not sneak up on you is Pesach. But like turn around and it's Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is in like what, 2 weeks?
3 weeks. 3 weeks. Yeah.
That's really soon. So
yes, it is.
and if you're not going to shul every day hearing the shofar, you might not know that.
Right. Right. I haven't even heard the shofar. I haven't even heard shofar once yet. Yeah.
Exactly.
True. I gotta get my kid to blow me one. That's the thing. And thank God, like, you know, having kids in school is helpful because, you know, their Parsha sheet comes home and you're like, oh, look, it's this week's Parsha. Yes, of course, the Midbar. I knew that, you know, or whatever. So that definitely does help, especially having a kid in like the preschool or like the lower grades. It's great because they do come home with the projects and they come home with stuff, you know. The older grades, it's a little bit more like esoteric. Oh, you're learning Pesachim. That's great. you know. No, but I'm so glad, Alex, that you mentioned like defining the spiritual fulfillment. And I am noting now that was not even on my list of things that I was talking about with fulfillment. And I think that is very telling right there too, you know, and finding that way to really stay connected and to stay just alive in our own relationship to Torah, especially since like theoretically we're giving it over to the next generation, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're not completely outsourcing that job to school, you know, but it's hard to give things over if you're not, you know, intaking in a meaningful way, not just intaking at all, I say good, but you know, intaking in a way that really is like making you so excited that you want to give something over, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think the key is sort of just to redefine how we used to connect, like you mentioned, and, you know, being connected to the holidays as students, and then like actually connect through this chaotic life that we lead. Mm-hmm. And the connection will be through sorrows. It will be through pain. It will be through life cycles. It's just not going to be so like clean and neat like it was in seminary and yeshiva sitting the base mentors. It's going to be like Hashem is testing us. Hashem is putting us through the ringer through our daily lives that just get more complicated, you know, as we mature. And if we can find that like real deep, maybe it's like a deep seated emuna of some sort of relationship with Hashem. I think that's what Hashem is, not that I know what Hashem is asking, at least in my mind, I've seen over the years how that it's actually become a deeper relationship.
Yeah.
That is totally different than, oh, I'm not in shul for Rosh Hashanah. Like, I don't even think about that. Like that, that's not how I define, right, you know, my connection to Hashem anymore.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we're talking, when we talk about fulfillment, you're talking basically about the expectations that that one has for themselves, because that's basically what it is. I've had these expectations for myself that by this age, I'd be able to do this, or at some point in my life, I'd want to be able to do that. But what about expectations of women from society? Let's make it specific, of frum women from society, and even more specific, what is it that frum men should know about how frum women view what they think societal expectations are? Mm. Something that we might not appreciate.
I think there are a lot of expectations coming from all different directions. And some of them are self-imposed, some of them are just narishkeit, like what people think we should look like, what other women think we should look like, what the stores think we should look like, you know, when we're buying clothes, what the woman sitting next to us in shul thinks we should look like, you know, that's really narishkeit. Like we have to separate that. But nonetheless, for many women, that's a huge pressure. And we need to acknowledge that. We have these expectations in terms of struggles with perfection, and whether it's, you know, in our marriages and raising our children, being mothers, Shabbos, mm-hmm. what our Shabbos tables look like. And oftentimes all of these expectations are unfortunately too tied into our own self-definition, our own self-worth, and it can get very complicated and very unhealthy. And what should men know? I think men should know that women are really, can be really hard on themselves. Again, I'm generalizing, but women can be hard. Women can create sort of expectations, and women can feel bad about themselves and deal with self-confidence issues if they feel like they're not meeting those self-imposed standards. You know, really the lady next to you in shul, like, does it really matter what she thinks about your outfit? You know, but often it's just so ingrained. And yeah, I, you know, it may, maybe men may say that sounds ridiculous, but I don't know if it's something part in human nature, you know, women's natures or not, but for many women, we really, really do struggle with perfectionism and what the ideal they think should be, you know, what we do, how we look, and everything in between.
Absolutely. I think I remember one of my Rebbetzin, Chana Levitan from in seminary, when we were making lists of things about ourselves, when we were trying to get to know ourselves for Shidduchim, right? Make a list about yourself. And she said, make a list of all your positive things and make a list of 3 negative things. And someone was like, well, why the numbers are on the negative things? And she's like, oh, because I've noticed that with girls and women, young women, like they will just go on and on and on and on and on about their negative attributes and they will just not stop. So I had to put like an actual number on it because otherwise they just had a tendency to focus overwhelmingly on the negative. And I think that ties in very much to the perfectionistic problem of the expectations that we put on ourselves for everything to be just so. You know, we need to make a Shabbos meal and it needs to have this many mains and this many side dishes and it needs to have this and it needs to have this in the soup and it needs to have also this and it needs to be on this kind of serving dishes and it has to look like this. And then we also have to have guests and we also have to have guests that are maybe not so simple, maybe guests who are not as easy, you know, and like, and don't forget the chesed and don't forget to also drop off the food for Bikur Cholam and don't forget to also drop off the food for Matan Vaseser, you know, like all of the, you know, and these are all amazing, beautiful things. And if you are in a place where you are able to do it and to give in a way that's not going to be, you know, detrimental to your health and your family and the general atmosphere of Shalom in your life, because of the hate, do it. You know, but also like we were saying about like knowing yourself and knowing what you're, where you are holding in life, to know when to say like, this I cannot do right now. And that is okay. And then to be okay with it. And then not to, so I think like for, to tell men, like, you know, be like, you're like, when you see your wife putting a potato kugel in the oven, you do not know the vast amount of pressure and story behind this potato kugel. It just,
I think often we're worried about being judged and this is part of the very nature of the Orthodox community, is we live in tight knit communities. And there's many blessings to that. But one of the struggles that comes with is we feel like everyone's looking over our shoulder and, you know, comparing us to some impossible standard or ideal. And the more we can block that out, we talk about this a lot on our podcast, and focus on the internal and just, you know, put up those blinds and be like, I need to focus on what works for me, what's healthy for me, what's healthy for my family, and not what other people think about me. You know, the more independent and healthier I think we'll be.
And also just, I want to add, like, even if like you're not worried about being judged by other people, you yourself are judging yourself based on what you see other people do. You're like,
exactly.
She makes her own outfits and does this or whatever. Like, you know, like this, like, and she's always smiling and remembers everyone's name or
she's
whatever.
A size two and has,
oh, forget it.
Children.
I gave up on that. Yeah.
I mean, come on. And their kids are all matching and like, yeah, Orthodox women are superwoman. They're like really superwoman. And like, why can I hardly function at the end of the day, you know?
Right. And right,
we're all noticing each other.
Right. So like, I guess for like men, just like we're very hard on ourselves. We need lots of compliments. I don't know. Does that sound like we need to be reminded of our God list, because like we're all amazing. And sometimes it's very easy to get caught up. Like we're all individually amazing in our own unique way. That is the way that Hashem made us, that we're supposed to be, you know, and sometimes we can get distracted by the amazingness of our neighbor and the amazingness of the person down the street. And, you know, it's easy to get distracted. And so sometimes it's nice to just be brought back to what is specifically good about us. If that,
you know, the message is you are enough. We need to hear that 100 times.
Is that Brené?
We need to tell, probably Brené Brown. We have to tell ourselves we are enough. Our spouses should tell us we're enough all the time.
So because when Rivki was listing all those things just in sequence, and I have to do this, and I have to drop off the food for this, and I, like just going through that, I'm sure it gets to a point at certain points. And this happens for men also, but I think that because of those types of like just requirement, chore after chore after chore after chore, after volunteer work, after familial responsibilities, it gets to a point where you're like, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't, mm-hmm. I have to stop. What can we, as the other side of this, do or say at that point? Is it individual for each woman, or is there some sort of like general concept that we need to understand? And I'm not talking to ask you to be like a marriage counselor here.
Yeah, sure.
This
good.
Be more like, like if I see my daughter having these struggles, or if I see my mother having these struggles, this is not my mother, but let's say I'll do my mother as an example because it's not her, because my grandparents have both passed. But let's say if I for example see my mother struggling taking care of her parents, all right, and just it's thing after thing after thing after thing. At some point, like, what can I say as a son? If I see my wife struggling with it, what can I say as a husband? What can I say as a parent that I might not, or specifically a father, that I might not appreciate being the male versus what another female could say?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the typical joke is like the man listens to the wife who's crying that she's overwhelmed, and he's like, okay, what can I do to fix this? And she's like, I'm not asking you to solve the problem. I need you just to listen to me as I list off my crazy insane day and everything that I need to get done. So for me, I can speak for myself. Like for me, I would want my spouse to listen. That always makes me feel better. Just listen, let me talk, let me get it out. I need to just express it because I need to unburden myself by communicating. Women often need to get stuff off their chest by communicating, and that's really important. And therefore they need their spouse to listen to them. And then what we do want them to say something. So what I would want to hear is just words of empathy, words of kindness, words of acknowledgement, words of validation. And then once I, you know, that's like a healing process for me. And then we can talk about how can I help you? How can we make this better? But those first two steps of the listening and the empathy and the validation are absolutely essential. I know for me, and I can probably speak for a lot of women too. Rivki, what do you say?
Yeah, 100%, basically everything you just said. And I can know, like, if in the moment when I'm having like my meltdown, I'm so stressed out or whatever, if my husband's like, what can I do? I will just become more stressed out. So be like, another decision. I have to make another decision. You're kidding me. So like, even though obviously like he's a great guy, he wants to help. So yeah, exactly. Listening, empathizing. And then after I have calmed down, then I could troubleshoot. I could say, could you bring the kugel over here or whatever, if he happens to be home, you know, which often he's not. but then like maybe we could find some sort of solution to see if there even needs to be a solution. Maybe I just needed to vent, you know, because a lot of those things that I was listing, like I feel satisfaction doing these things. Like it actually is very satisfying. Just like maybe in like a 10-minute window, it feels completely crushing. But at the end of the day, it actually is very satisfying. I just needed to be validated though at some point, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just because you guys brought it up a little bit earlier, I want to talk a little bit about diet, but not in the sense of kind of what I think of as a woman. Do I need to be eating? And am I guilty about eating what I like to eat? Am I guilty about going to the ice cream store or to 7-Eleven and getting something that I probably shouldn't be eating? Guys go through that also. But I want to talk about that in terms of athletics and things like, so athletics and diet combined with it. So when I was growing up, I was able to play sports. I was able to be very active as just part of my regular day. And even now, that's something that I do regularly. And I know that there are women out there that do exercise, and there are men out there that do not. But I was just wondering about your thoughts about the diet and exercise aspect of the From Woman's Life.
No, I think this is a very good question because it ties into really... I think what we were talking about earlier about prioritizing yourself and taking care of yourself and making the time to do these things, because eating well, eating food that's going to nourish you and is not just like strictly like, remember, like after I had my last baby, I think I ate like noodle soup straight for 3 weeks because it was hot and it was easy and I could get to it. Did it make me feel great? No, shockingly, it didn't. But I feel like, you know, eating food that is really good and healthy and full of nutrients and is tasty, that takes either a lot of work or a lot of money, basically, when it comes down to it. And so it's something that a lot of times I think gets sidelined. And exercise, you know, it's tricky. I think it's becoming more, at least in my circles, it's becoming definitely more popular. Like right now, I feel like it's having like a resurgence. A lot of women are more getting into running and getting into things that are like outside exercise. I have even gone running myself, shockingly. But I think that I have found... that there's an exercise class I do twice a week with a woman over Zoom. And since I started really doing it regularly, I was like, wow, I feel better and I'm happier. And like, this is like the whole thing about working out and the endorphins that happen, like it actually is, it's good on so many levels. Also, it's something that you have to have time for, you have to make room for, you have to make space for, you have to have shoes, you have to have exercise clothes. And so I think that like so many of the things that we've discussed on this, you know, in this conversation, it's very, very easy to say, I don't have time. I don't have resources. I can't do it. And so I think that it's just one of the things that can very easily get sidelined. One of the things that could really improve the overall quality of life, but still get sidelined if you have a certain sedentary and somewhat, I don't know, introverted personality or whatever it is, if that makes sense, even if you mm-hmm. don't have those personality yeah. traits, but it's just time and effort and resources again.
I'll tell you what I think added to the kind of adoption of working out. I think with the advent of a lot of these workout at home, you started out as DVDs, but now it's all streaming. Yeah. Those things, you don't have to go to the gym anymore. You don't have to have a lot of equipment here. Just follow this. I'm sure people do like a Peloton, but for those of us plebs that can't afford a $2,000 right. bicycle, there's other options out there that you can work out at home. So I do think that did help. 100%. And as you said, running and yeah, but sometimes people want to do something more than just run.
Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of women go to gyms and do all these things, right. You know, Rifki, you're 100% right. Like to me, I see exercise and diet as a mindset. And it's a mentality, and it's that mentality of I am worth it. I need to take care of myself. I need to prioritize myself. I think it's a struggle for many women who their to-do list is never ending. And instead of, oh, I'm going to spend 45 minutes from 10 to 10:45 a.m. or from 9 to 9:45 p.m. when I get home from work and finish putting the kids to sleep, you know, to exercise, how many millions of other things on that to-do list can I do in that 45 minutes? And hey, I could sit and watch Netflix too, to chill. You know right. what I'm saying? So like
right.
it so often gets just pushed off because we so often push push other things in that are more immediate, because there's so many things that are so immediate on our plates. Yes. I think it's a struggle. I think it's a struggle for men too. You know, my husband's a doctor. He works insane hours. He's a physician. Does he promote exercise and healthy diet? Yes. The poor man, I mean, he eats dinner at 11 p.m. after his chavrusa. You know, I mean, it's like his lifestyle is insane. My heart goes out to him. Hobbies, forget about it. You know, like there are many men that are, you know, working really, really hard. I think it's a issue. I mean, listen, the elephant in the room is, you know, body image for a woman is often diet and exercise is so closely intertwined with that. Yes. And that is a real, real, I guess, challenge for many women. You know, what are their motives for the diet and the exercise? Is it what Rifki was saying before? It's to nourish your body so that you can, you know, take care of yourself and take care of others? Or is it, you know, weight loss? Is it fitting some ideal, you know, body shape or body image that they feel is necessary? I think, Rifki, what do you say? I think it's a real stress for a lot of women.
I think you're absolutely right. I can't speak
for men. So you could tell us about that. But
yeah, no, I mean, I think that maybe just because I've completely given up on the idea of being anything below the size that I am. And I'm at the age where I'm like, this is it. I am just like moving into like preparing myself for bubbyhood, you know, like comfiness. But no, but really, no, I think that 100%, like, not like I don't also like look at myself in the mirror and think like, huh, that's interesting. This is different than being 20. You know, my metabolism is different. Everything is different now. And, you know, I hear my 9-year-old daughter, who is very thin, like healthy, but thin, say, Mommy, do I look fat? I'm like, where are you even hearing this?
Yeah.
Where is this coming from? I'm like racking my brain. What have I been saying in front of her? Am I giving her bad messages? Is this like where, you know, so it's really something that is very pervasive. And even with my mentality of like, I'm doing this to be healthy, which I am, it's not like these things don't also pop into my mind. And I think that they are louder depending on your own personal relationship with size and body and food and everything. It can be very complex emotionally and historically. Yeah. And
I also wanted to add that I think fashion is a big component of the firm community. So yeah, Julia Hart, it is. From women like to wear colors and like to dress in style, and they do. And depending on the community, and we've got the range of very yeshivish communities who, oh man, those, you know, those girls in Shadacha, they are wearing like what is, you know, from runway kind of stuff, you know, absolutely. Like really in touch, really dressing beautifully. And for, yeah, I don't know, Izzo, if you really want to talk about body image, but I think for many women, like, you know, what they look like, how they're dressing, the clothes that they're wearing, this feeling of, I need to be this size so I look good in this outfit.
Yes.
It's a whole mindset shift to be like, you know what? It's okay. I don't look like the Instagram, you know, influencer who's showing always in my face, showing me what I'm meant to look like in these cute Shabbos outfits. It's okay.
Right. I do want to give a shout out. There are a lot of influencers or more now that are also showing different types, different sizes of women.
It's very important. I think
that they should be, you know.
Yeah. And you may not be, listen, we're not necessarily reading Vogue magazine. We're not necessarily getting those messages from, you know, from secular fashion magazines. We have our own culture of, you know, social media influencers, and, you know, and fashion, which is huge on Instagram. We can't be naive to think that it doesn't impact, you know, how we view ourselves.
Right. Absolutely.
Just to give you a quick response to that on the men's side, in terms of the clothing, there is definitely like, it's becoming more of a thing for men but to the untrained eye, or to even like the barely trained eye, there's not a lot of a difference between a $200 suit and a $1,000 suit. It's a suit. Like, we don't have
custom. Come on.
Stitching. Yes, there is. But like, unless you're looking for it, you're not going to find it. And men generally, with a handful of exceptions, won't necessarily look for it. You're wearing a suit, you're wearing a suit. But in terms of the exercise, I think there comes a point in every from man's life where you have to choose between the Kiddush club and the health club, and never the twain shall meet. Like, at some point you're either going to be the guy that eats a lot and drinks a lot, or you're going to be the guy that really watches what you're eating and exercises a lot. I don't think there's a guy that does both of those things or neither of those things. There might be a neither. There might be a few neithers,
not of both.
There's the very thin people. But you have to choose at some point. I want to give you guys a chance to talk a little bit about your podcast, because it's, for my money, it's probably one of, if not the best, like from podcast on the air right now, my present company included. I really enjoy listening to your podcast.
If you
can give the audience an elevator pitch as to what you guys talk about on the show and why they should come listen.
Well, you know, we talk about that we're exploring the complexities, nuances, and joys of From Womanhood through, you know, personal conversations with me and Alex and interviews with guests that either have expertise or have a unique perspective. And we hear from tons of just normal From women over the course of the episodes, because we think that, you know, you don't have to be an influencer to have something valuable to contribute to the world. And we think that every From woman should have a chance to have her voice elevated.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're not Rebbitzins, we're regular, normal from women. And I think that there's been a shift. We mentioned Instagram and lots of wonderful things on Instagram. There are just regular women out there who are like, I have something to share. I want to do a series on Divrei Torah on the Parsha every week. And they're, you know, they don't have any credentials. They're not educators. And I think that's sort of a direction I would embrace that. I think that was something that we sort of wanted to be part of, is like, you know, we're just grappling too, like everyone else, and we're real about it. And we discuss that, the two of us, and Baruch Hashem, like a lot of the feedback that we've gotten is just like, wow, like you guys could be my friends. You could be like sitting at Starbucks and having these conversations. Yeah. People want real, people want authentic. And we bring in the experts and the Rebbitzins and the psychologists too, because we want to hear from them.
But
that's something that we just sort of want to share, you know, share with other people, is come through that, come to that journey, join that journey with us. And I talk about, you know, I think this is empowering. I think this can be very inspiring. I think we all need role models, adult grown men from, you know, men and women. If we can provide real people who are role models to others, I think that can be a huge source of fulfillment and growth, actually.
Absolutely.
Awesome. And you could, I guess you could find the show anywhere you can get podcasts, anywhere you listen to this show, you could probably get your show.
Yeah.
Are you guys on social media?
Yes,
Instagram, I know.
Instagram and also Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Haven't hit Twitter yet.
We do it, but it's not a very active account, but it exists.
Mm-hmm. And on our Facebook and Instagram, you know, it's Normal From Women. You can find us on, you know, any platform where you find your podcast. But we really like to provide more additional content and sort of create a community there where we have, you know, quotes from our speakers. It is a podcast, so you don't know what they look like. So we have their headshots, so you can put a face to a name. We have additional videos. Our takeaways are there. So we definitely encourage people to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Absolutely.
And I will point out that you don't have to be a woman to enjoy the podcast. You probably want to be a woman to enjoy the community that they're building.
I mean, we really try to address, like, you know, communal issues as well. Obviously some episodes are really more female focused.
Yeah. But if anyone you're a guy, you can probably skip those.
Exactly. But you know, anyone who cares, like going back to the beginning of this episode, anyone who cares about hearing the perspective of From Women in our communities, this is a great window into hearing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I have enjoyed, and even though it is called Normal From Women, like you're not only talking, sometimes you do talk about women's issues specifically, and there are some things that might be a little bit less interesting for a man, but you're not talking exclusively about women's issues. There's other things that you guys talk about that really can be relatable to men as well. So I highly recommend everybody check that out, at least give it a shot. And I think you really enjoy what you hear there.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anything else you guys want to let us know?
I think that's it.
I think we covered a lot of ground. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you for inviting us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really been a pleasure.
All right. So Alex and Rivki, thank you so much for joining me this week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Thanks.
My thanks to Alex Fletcher and Rivki Silva for taking time out of their schedule to join me this week, especially to Rivki, who joined from her vacation. There is so much to discuss from this episode, and obviously there is a lot we didn't get to cover. So if you're interested, join us on Twitter to continue this discussion using the hashtag FromMenShouldKnow. Until next week, Kol Tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.